Well, we're back for on part two of this little series we're in, Matthew chapters 24 and 25. We're doing Matthew's Gospel all term, working through to the cross. But chapters 24 and 25 are a little discrete section. All Jesus is teaching what life will be like now as we wait for Jesus' return. So we've already learned, if you were here last week, there will be a day when Jesus Christ will return from heaven. And the question Jesus is addressing is, how do we live as we wait for that day? What will that day be like? Now, this concept of being ready for a day in the future, I think we're all quite familiar with, aren't we? If we've got exams on the horizon, we need to do some revision. If we've got a special birthday, if we want a party, we're going to need to plan it. If we've got a wedding, there's certainly going to be plans and preparations to put in place. It doesn't just happen. If we're going to have a child, well, then again, there's probably a nursery to organise and clothes, and there's lots to do. If you even want to go on holiday, you're probably going to need to book something, pack, get ready to go. When we have something on the horizon, we need to be ready for it. Well, there's one very big event on the horizon of everybody in this world. That is the day when Jesus Christ comes back. And the question I want to turn our minds to today is, how do we make sure we are ready for that day? And how should we best use our time as we wait for it? Now, this little section in Matthew 24 began when Jesus left the temple. And his disciples on the way out said, Jesus, isn't this temple amazing? And it was. In human terms, it was an extraordinary building, dominating the whole of Jerusalem. And then Jesus tells them, this temple will be destroyed. And then it gives rise to a whole series of questions. You've got a Bible open, verse 3 of chapter 24. And the disciples then say to Jesus privately, when will this happen? And what will be the sign of your coming and of the end of the age? See, the disciples are really minded by these questions. When is the temple going to be destroyed? What will be the sign of your coming, Jesus? When will be the sign of the end of the age? They want details. They want to know what's life going to look like going forward. And in these chapters, we get some teaching. Jesus sort of gives them some straightforward teaching. And then he tells them a series of parables, all of which to help them think about the answers to those questions. I think, therefore, in these chapters, Jesus manages our expectations of what life is like. And now, what should we expect as followers of Jesus Christ? And how to live as we wait for that day when Jesus comes back? And also gives us some detail of what it would be like on that day. Now, if you were here last week, Philip did the sort of first half of this chapter, and that was mainly thinking about what does life look like as we wait for Jesus' return. Philip described it a bit like a stick of rock, and he said basically there's some themes that run throughout of history as we wait for Jesus' return. And then he gave a little snapshot, Jesus does, of what will happen in the destruction of the temple in AD 70. But our focus this week moves on, and we're now focusing on that final day. In particular, that question of what will be the sign of your coming and what will be the sign of the end of the age, and the question of when will it happen, comes forward. Now, Jesus has just taught, immediately to our verses today, that he will return. And Philip described it in three words. He said it would be a day that's cosmic, decisive, and conclusive. In other words, this day will happen. Jesus will come back, and that will wrap up this world as it is, so to speak, at the moment. There is a day coming. I think, therefore, that leads to a couple of questions. Firstly, when is that day? When will that day be when Jesus will return? And then this second question of how should we live as we wait for Jesus' return? And that's really what I think our verses start to help us understand this morning. So let's look at question one. When will Jesus return? And this is 36 through to 44. And on one level, it's actually quite a simple answer. No one knows apart from the Father. Let me read verse 36. But about that day, the day when Jesus will return, but about that day or hour, no one knows, not even the angels in heaven, nor the Son, but only the Father. No one knows. Frankly, not even Jesus in his humanity knows that day. No one knows. We don't know that day when Jesus will return. That cosmic, decisive, conclusive day, we don't know when it will happen. And yet, for some reason, throughout history, people seem to think they can predict it. I had great fun this week. I went on Wikipedia. Apparently, there is a page for a list of predicted dates for apocalyptic events. There's a whole bunch of people who say they know when Jesus will return. one of my favourite ones was a lady who apparently predicted that Jesus was going to return on February the 4th, 1962. Okay, she got that wrong. So apparently then she's had another go. And this one, apparently she says this. She now says, Armageddon will take place in 2020, and Jesus will return to defeat the unholy trinity of the Antichrist, Satan, and the false prophet between 2020 and 2037. So she decided to hedge her bets a bit this time, not just give her one day. Jesus is clear, no one knows. She does not know the day. No one knows, apart from the Father. We do not know when that day will be. Let's just tease out the implications of that a little bit. It means Jesus could come back this lunchtime. He could come back next week. He could come back in 2 years' time, in hundreds of years' time, thousands of years' time. We don't know. But it doesn't mean he won't come back soon. But he could come back a long time. We do not know. And then Jesus goes on to push this a little bit further, verses 37 through to 39. He says, as it was in the days of Noah, so it will be at the coming of the Son of Man. For in the days before the flood, people were eating and drinking and marrying and giving in marriage, up to the day Noah entered the ark, and knew nothing about what would happen until the flood came and took them all away. That is how it will be at the coming of the Son of Man. So those of you familiar with the story of Noah, of course, Noah builds this ark, given to him instruction by God, and he builds it. And yet it seems to be that people, even though he was building this ark, just ignored him. The salvation that God was offering, they weren't interested in. They just carried on, eating and drinking, marrying and giving it out. It says that this day when Jesus returns, it will be, one sense, sudden, but unexpected. Because people will just carry on as life is. Just think about it. Jesus will return and people will be here in Muswell Hill drinking coffee and crocodile cafe. People will be shopping into the skate, so to speak, it could be. The buses will be trundling. Life will be carrying on as normal when that day happens, which we do not know. But let's not suppose it's going to be some sort of special events happening so we all know what day it is. It will just come. And life will just be carrying on as normal. Then we get verses 40 and 41, which I think are some of the hardest verses in this passage. Jesus says, on that day, two men will be in the field, one will be taken and the other left. Two women will be grinding with a handmill, one will be taken and the other left. See, this day is going to come when Jesus will return, and not everybody will be trusting Jesus Christ. See, that day of judgment will come. Some will be taken to be with him, and some will not. One of the books I've been reading on this passage is J.C. Ryle. He was an English bishop in Liverpool back about 100 or so years ago. He makes a couple of helpful comments on this. He just reminds his readers, he says, the world is not going to be converted when Jesus comes back. The world will not be converted when Jesus comes back. And then he says this, and I think the implications can be hard to hear, but we need to hear them because this is what Jesus teaches. Ryle writes, in a moment, in a twinkling of the eye, at that last trumpet, each party shall be separated from the other forevermore. Wives shall be separated from husbands, parents from children, brothers from sisters, masters from servants, preachers from hearers. There shall be no time for repentance or a change of mind. When the Lord appears, all shall be taken as they are and will reap according as they have sown. I don't know how you find those words. I find them, they're hard to hear. But there is a reality. There is a day coming where if people do not trust Jesus Christ, it will be too late. I have many unbelieving friends and family. And there is a reality to the fact that Jesus could return at a day I do not know. And if they do not know Jesus, well, they will be separated from Jesus for eternity. As our passage will go on to describe, that will be a place of weeping and gnashing of teeth. As we hear these truths, does it not drive us back to the mission field and drive us back to our knees? We need to pray for God. We have a suburb, a part of London, a city, a world that needs to know Jesus. He is coming back. And on that day, it will be too late. Two men were in the field, one were taken, and the other left. No one knows the day when Jesus will return. It will be sudden, it will be unexpected, but that day division is decisive. But Jesus, he presses on, doesn't he, verses 42 to 44. Therefore keep watch, Jesus says, because you do not know on what day your Lord will come. But understand this, if the owner of the house had known at what time of night the thief was coming, he would have kept watch and would not have let his house be broken into. So you also must be ready, because the Son of Man will come at an hour when you do not expect it. This is a sort of transition between our two questions. It's another reminder we do not know the day. The illustration here is the homeowner and the thief. I don't know about you, we've actually never been burgled, had a car broken into, but my understanding is it's a pretty grim experience to think that someone's been in your house, rifling through your stuff. There's just that break of personal privacy, it's just a bit grim. My dare say is if you knew the day when that would happen, you'd have taken measures to stop it. As you know, we live in Wood Green, and most of my neighbours have actually been burgled. I think that day probably will come when we will get burgled, it's just probability is quite likely. But if I knew the day when that might happen, I would take measures to stop it. If I knew the day the thief was going to come over the fence and crowbar my French windows, could get into my house and steal my tablet and my television, well, I would have made sure I bought some new locks, probably, and I'd have made sure that I had the police on speed dial, and I'd have made sure I was at home. What was that late now? Don't come. So Jesus' command is we need to be ready. We need to be ready because this day will come when Jesus will return. And so what does it look like to be ready? So the first thing Jesus says is we do not know the day when he will return, but it will be sudden, it will be unexpected, and it will be decisive. But what does it look like to be ready? Well, the answer to this is Jesus then tells a series of parables. And we're going to look at the first one this morning. We're going to look at the second one in all age this afternoon, and Philip will pick the third one up next week. So the first one is this, what I've called the parable of the wise and foolish servants. This afternoon we've got the parable of the 10 bridesmaids, some of you might be familiar with that, and then we've got the parable of the bags of gold, which is next week. Now I think these three parables, they've all got similar themes to them, and actually they all go together. So I want us to understand what it means to wait for that day. It's good to read all three. So I encourage you, do go away and read the next two. But let me just say the commonalities between them, there's three. In each of these parables there is a delay. So in our parable this morning, the master stays away for a little while. In our parable this afternoon, they're waiting for the bridegroom to come, and there's a delay, and he doesn't come till midnight. And in the parable of the bags of gold, the master goes on a journey. There's always a delay. Secondly, in every parable there is a day of reckoning. So therefore the delay is never permanent. There is a day of reckoning. So in our parable we look at in a moment, the master returns when the servants do not expect him at an hour he is not aware. Verse 50. In the parable of the 10 bridesmaids, it happens in the middle of the night. And in the parable of the bags of gold, the master comes back. There is a day of reckoning. Thirdly, in every parable, there is a division. And what's striking is you read the three, you start to realise there is a division between wise and foolish in each occasion. And the striking thing about the wise is every time the wise one, at the end of it, gets blessing. It's incredible blessing. And yet, the consequence for the foolish is disastrous. It seems to be the division sort of makes clear that there's real blessing for being wise and disaster for being foolish. And of course, the application is direct to us. We live in the delay. We are waiting for this long wait, for that day we do not know when Jesus will return. But it's clear it will be a long wait. So be ready for that. Secondly, there will be a day of reckoning, and that day will come when Jesus returns. And there will be a day of division. And these parables all have those similar things. So let's look at our first parable. Let me read it. Verses 45 to 51. Jesus says, "Who then is the faithful and wise servant, whom the master has put in charge of his servants in his household to give them their food at the proper time? It will be good for that servant whose master finds him doing so when he returns. Truly I tell you, he will put him in charge of all his possessions. So suppose that servant is wicked and says to himself, 'Oh, my master is staying away a long time. And he then begins to beat his fellow servants and to eat and drink with drunkards. The master of that servant will come on a day when he does not expect him, and at an hour he is not aware. He will cut him to pieces and assign him a place with the hypocrites, where there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. So our second question is, how should we live as we wait for Jesus' return? I think a simple line is, we should live as faithful and wise servants. That's what we're encouraged to do in this parable. Now let's unpack, what does that look like? So, we have a master in this parable, and he gives his servants a task. Verse 45, they're to look after their fellow servants, and to make sure they have food. That's the task that they seem to have been given. And then we meet these two servants. We've got the wise one, and he's the servant who's faithful and wise. And when his master returned, he's been getting on with the task he's been given. That's what he set about doing. And the result of this parable is extraordinary generosity. Verse 46, it will be good for that servant. His master finds him doing so when he returns. Truly, I tell you, he will put him in charge of all his possessions. Incredible, isn't it? The faithful and wise servant ends up being put in charge of all the master's possessions. Great blessing of role and responsibility on that day. And then we've got the wicked servant. And he seems to me, uses the delay for his advantage. So he starts to beat the fellow servant and sets out on this drinking bender, eating and drinking with the drunkards. And the horrific thing here is the consequence. In verse 50. See, the master returns at a time he's unaware of. And verse 51, he will cut him to pieces and assign him a place with the hypocrites where there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. And that's a description of the place the Bible calls hell. So clearly, we're being called to be this faithful and wise servant, but what is look like to be the faithful and wise servant? Well, look at this parable. What Jesus' picture is, it's a servant who sets himself about the master's business. That's what he does. He does, he gets on with the task that he's been given to do in the interim. It's a servant who sets himself to be about the master's business. So the question then comes, what's the master's business? What business have we been given? If Jesus Christ is our master and the delay is waiting for his return, how do we be faithful and wise when we get on with the task he's given us? And in Matthew's Gospel, we've seen that. It's loving God and loving our neighbour. And then towards the end of the Gospel, we're going to see it's taking the good news of Jesus Christ to the world, making disciples and teaching them all Jesus has commanded. So the question is, as we think about our lives, are Jesus' priorities our priorities? Is the task Jesus has given us our task? Is Jesus' business our business? Now that will look different from each one of us, but it is a heart question, isn't it? Is at the heart of the decisions we're making about everything we do in life, trying to seek to put Jesus' tasks at the centre? Because that's what the faithful and wise servant does. He says, with the resources and things I have been given in my circumstances, how do I let Jesus Christ's priorities shape all that I do? Does Jesus look at us and see wise and faithful servants? Now, at this point, some of you might be thinking, oh, this is looking a little bit like judgment by works. So I'll just address that. There's this day, and it seems to be that the wise thing is we need to be about this task. But that is, for us, is in Matthew's Gospel, this tension has been running all the way through. You see, to be ready for that final day is someone ultimately who recognises Jesus as the King and says, repent, says sorry for failing to recognize Jesus as King and not living with that in their lives. Turning to what Jesus as the King means being ready for that day. But the reality is, if we're living for Jesus as the King, change will follow. The two just go hand in glove for Matthew, and we've seen that a few times. I always find it striking at the end of the Sermon of the Mount, earlier in this Gospel. Jesus says, the wise man is the one who hears Jesus' words and puts them into practice. So throughout the Gospel, if we're those who are trusting Jesus as our King, our lives will change. And that's striking if you think about this wicked servant. Because actually he cares nothing for the master, as he in this parable. He doesn't care for the task the master's given him. He beats the master's servants and goes and gets drunk. He's seen on the master's wine. He doesn't care for the master. And so the call for us is, are we those who are trusting Jesus Christ to be ready for that day? Trusting that Jesus Christ has died for our sin? And then as a consequence, seeking to make his tasks our task in our lives. His business our business as we get on with what he's given us. That task of loving him, loving each other, and taking the good news of Jesus to the world. Which of course they need to hear for that final day. So my question for you, as always, is, are we seeking to live as faithful and wise servants? We don't know when Jesus is going to come back. It will be sudden, it will be unexpected, it will be decisive. And the first thing in this first parable we get is, are we going to be the faithful and wise servants seeking to serve our King as we wait for that day? Challenging questions, aren't they? So can I go away and encourage you to maybe mull and think about that, talk in the group groups, pray with one another about those things this week. What does it look like to be a faithful and wise servant and to be making those tasks our priority? Let's pray.